Okay, we'll keep moving forward. So just make some notifications on the
717.
717, yeah. That's the record show. So, yeah. That was one. Okay, moving forward. Thank you. And I'll ask our city attorney.
I don't have anything in particular. I spent quite a while for a different client working out of revisions to the master service agreement with RADCOM, because multiple clients of mine use RADCOM. So when that comes up again, I don't know when that is for RADCOM. I've got a better version that we can work from. But in the meanwhile, when we do individual scopes of work for particular projects, I'm very familiar with master service agreement now, at least to say that we need to take a good hard look at any warranties that we would expect from RADCOM, because their master service agreement by default disclaims all warranties that relate in any way to their work,
mm-hmm.
except as provided in a particular scope of work. So
that,
all that does is it shifts our focus then to any warranties we would expect in a scope of work that they'll then override the disclaimer of warranties in the master service agreement. So just a little heads up.
Okay.
Have you worked with Phoenix?
Phoenix, no, this is just RADCOM.
Okay.
I don't know about Phoenix. You
said Phoenix, and I guess they're a lot less expensive, so they have our own printers.
Oh, really?
I quote from them, and I guess they're a lot better with their service, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently. So
I mean,
EDC says.
I all I can say is, you know, I know a lot of people use RADCOM in this area because they're local.
Yeah.
But I don't like the service agreement. A good lawyer on the other side out of Florida, because he's strictly an IT guy, was reasonable to work with, but there were certain things he just would not back away from, especially in the warranties department and liability department. I got a few inroads, but by and large, I mean, I'd be more than happy to consider you reusing somebody else if it works out.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, and I don't know what our period is. I think my recollection is that there's not a current scope of work in place that you can actually cancel a master service agreement with a fairly short notice, like 5 days or something.
All right.
So you have to do it right, but that's one positive of that master service agreement, is if you don't have a current scope of work in place, you can get out.
Which we don't. We don't have.
They don't do the data backup and any of that stuff for you?
They do, but we didn't get a new master. We never got the master.
We don't have an ongoing thing.
We have an ongoing, but
yeah.
It was a, I don't know, you look, we had you, did,
look at
the yeah, look at it, but I thought we had Ken look at it at one
yeah.
time.
Yeah, we haven't looked at the quote and the
contractor
even the quote.
Okay.
I don't
know.
Well,
yeah,
we'll pull that stuff out.
All
if,
right.
If it makes sense to maybe see if anyone else would
yeah.
do it. I mean, I don't want to speak ill of RADCOM because I know those guys pretty well. And it's just, I think they're over-lawyered, quite honestly.
Okay. All right. is that a thing, over-lawyered? Coming from a lawyer.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you, Ken. Thank you for that.
The first step.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you for that. We will be getting there. You're going to be coming up so shortly.
Yeah, I was going to add the difference. It's just public comment.
But, yeah, the public comment's all the way down the bottom. So we already went through it once, so we'll get to it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm sorry. No, you're good. You're good. So what we'll do is we will move on to unfinished business. And Josh Good has a what I call a state of the PDA report for us.
Light reading.
What?
Oh, look
at that.
This is the whole report.
Oh, joy. There you go. Oh, okay.
Woo!
Yeah. Well, look, I got a lot of late reading tonight.
Yeah. And for the audience, we have PowerPoint. In there again now. Where do you want the accompanying PowerPoint? It kind of goes along.
Y'all want to say?
Yeah.
Sure. It's not the same thing I already have. No.
Yeah, essentially. I just turned the song right there, y'all.
You may have turned it on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, not that. All right, let me get the picture here.
Which one?
So if the council, can follow along the actual report, that would be so the Public Development Authority hired me as a consultant to really get into the nuts and bolts of this report analysis on what happened for the year 2019. So this is what this report is. So the things that I looked at for this report was the state of human capital within the organization, a brief overview of the STARC data that we had available for the PDA, comparing and contrasting 2019 to 2018. I also broke down major expenses that we incurred in 2019. I provided the Public Development Authority some recommendations that can be implemented in 2020, a bit more successful than 2019, and then I shared some final thoughts. So the first thing that I looked at was the human capital. So what I did here is I ran a DAC assessment, which is direction, alignment, and commitment. Overall, the organization, the human capital, is pretty positive. The one area that they scored relatively poorly in was alignment. So what we did is we asked all the employees in the store to fill out a survey answering all these questions on a 1 through 5 scale, and we averaged them together. And alignment, they didn't do as well as the other categories. The lowest scoring category there, the lowest scoring question was, the employees didn't feel that people who have different roles or functions coordinate their work effectively. And I think that definitely shows up in the financial results of the business. They agree on where they're going. Everyone seems pretty committed, but they're all over the place in terms of what they're actually trying to accomplish. So, any questions on the DAC assessment?
And Josh, to make it clear, you interviewed every single employee at that building, or that for the PDA.
That's right. So there was one employee where the relationship with the organization terminated the day I was scheduled to chat with them.
How convenient.
So I was not able to connect with that individual.
Mm. Did anyone explain to you why that happened?
So it was explained that the person apparently had violated some procedure, so it sounds like there was a legitimate reason for that termination. It's just the timing of it.
Approximately when did this violation occur? Did it happen just coincidentally to her? Happen right when you were?
It appeared to be a fishing expedition.
Told it had happened before, but the person did left the store unattended and went outside, and there was a customer in the store, which is illegal.
So a big no-no. But I don't know why I couldn't have spoken with that person beforehand.
Yes. And that person was a long-term person. They'd been there a while.
I believe so.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I did ask the employees a series of questions, which is on page 4 of the report here. However, the key takeaway from my speaking with the staff is that they're pretty well insulated from the financial reality of the business. They weren't really understanding or aware of where the business was financially or how it was doing as an operation. There's definitely a disconnect between the employee's effort and their connection with the results. But overall, the staff is pretty engaged.
So if we want to turn to page 5 of the report, this is profit and loss analysis year over year since inception. So the first 2 years were pretty good. They were in the black. And then from 2017 onwards, not so great. 2017 was a small loss, but 2018 to 2019 saw losses of over $50,000 a year, each year. Not good. And there should have been changes implemented at the end of 2018 when that loss occurred. There should have been some real soul searching. That happens, and it doesn't look like that happened because we saw a repeat of the same figures. Yeah, no defensive actions were taken. What happened is the previous board that was appointed, instead of choosing to make changes to the business, just took on more debt to float it, which is a terrible business strategy. Any questions on year-over-year profit and loss?
During the 2 years that they were profitable, were they not showing hour to hour what their sales were?
That's what I understand. They were a little bit more diligent on the tracking the health of the business. It looks like as the years have gone by, they kind of stepped away from that granular detail.
Hence, we have losses.
Yeah. If you don't know money's leaving your pocket and you're not checking it frequently, if you set up automatic billing on your bank account and don't check your bank account, you might be surprised by what you find.
So keep track of.
Yeah, when you keep track of your expenses, how they do, your sales, your inventory, that's just not true. So page 6 of the report shows profit and loss by month, 2019 versus 2018. 2018 with the blue line, 2019 is the red line. The business patterns are definitely rhyming here. There was an unaccounted for expense in unaccounted for income in 2018. There is an account called billable expense income, which gives you about $70,000 in profit for December. That also, there's an $85,000 entry in October that year as well. I asked the executive director to provide additional information on that, and I'm going to work up and furnish it. It's not been furnished just yet.
So are you saying that $85,000 just kind of fell out of the sky, basically?
Looking at the report, yeah. I don't know where that money came from or what it was accounted for.
Yeah.
Could that be loans? You suppose?
What is the book of
income? Yeah, I certainly hope not.
But that's, the timing's awful.
Yeah.
Isn't that when they tried to pay her back but she wouldn't accept it?
And he entered it as income rather than income.
Well, if that's the case, that's completely unacceptable.
No, absolutely. But yeah, that would be the only reason in my mind from everything we've gone through was that $80,000 to pay back one of the Spencers, I do believe.
Yeah.
But then she denied the...
Those funds were misappropriated.
Yeah. And they went to float, and then they went to floating the business.
Yeah, and I'll go into that in further detail.
Okay. See, that's a slower time of the year, so there's no way you have big income coming in November and December.
Yeah.
Not that much. No way. You're slow as much.
So,
So further down the page, I've included I've included charts here depicting the sales that the store generated in 2018 and 2019. I deliberately excluded the sales tax that is collected. That is reported in sales in the books, but it's kind of misleading when we get up and say, oh, we did X amount of sales. Well, about 34% of that is taxes, so that's not money we get to keep. So I wanted to give a good picture of what we're actually doing in sales, month over month, year over year. So as you can see, for the first half of 2019, sales were significantly lagging 2018. And they have since, in the latter half of the year, have recovered starting around August. The business has been doing more sales than they did in 2018. But overall, 2019 lagged 2018 by about 5%. Sales for 2018 were $646,000, and sales for 2019, again including sales tax, was $615,000. So 5% year-over-year decrease. Yeah, Tom.
I noticed the sales in November are less than what they're profitable. Like that's kind of hard to do, isn't it? It's right here on your P&L up above your line graph at just below 50,000 in profit, but your sales are less than the profit for the same month. So they've got something wrong. They've got a big problem. Something's wrong.
Just
you can't have more profit than you got sales.
This is just comparing the 2 years. So this is just the 2 years sales. He's got the profit and loss on the next page.
No, he held up above.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So they didn't make
their sales were less than 50,000, but they almost made 50,000 in profit.
No. The red line is 2019.
No, but I'm looking at the blue line.
Yeah, so the blue line again, that unaccounted for $70,000 that they put into that.
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't sales.
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Look at the,
Yeah.
So, Josh, let me just clear this up. If you look at this graph, this is very interesting because the red line was the year that they moved to Stevenson.
Yes.
So Stevenson sales are far less than they were here in the blue line when they were here in Bonneville, which we were told they were going to go much higher. And if you look where they were close or where they were less, the blue, that was the time they were moving, so they would have been lower.
Yeah.
And the other one, so my point is what I'm saying is it was not a good move to go to Stevenson because the numbers show they were doing better here.
Except for the rent. That would be the only thing.
Exactly. But if you don't have the sales, it doesn't really matter.
But the last half of 19 was higher than 18.
So the sales are rent.
Averaged out for.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the reason that 18 was lower is because this is when they were moving and getting set up.
Yeah.
So they could have been higher than two. But this time they were here.
Yeah, but before they were moving, they didn't have very good product, is what I.
Well,
did.
No,
they
I understand
had a lot of business, so everybody was going to the other business.
I understand, but my point is, up until when they started moving in September, until that point,
yeah.
You can see they were doing much better here than they were at the same time when they moved there.
That's just all I'm saying.
Yeah,
that was that seasonal potentially.
So
I'm talking from January till February, September.
So 28.
That overall moving to Stevenson was the right thing to do for the health of the business. That lease agreement that they were paying there was untenable.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredibly expensive. It was not a fair deal. The way they moved was poor because they sat renting space from this gentleman while they were paying rent on another store. They should have planned and orchestrated that move much more efficiently and effectively than they did. Now, there are a whole host of issues with the store being on the main road of Stevenson. Marijuana is a product that
it's a private consumption thing. People really don't want. You don't want to see. You only see run into your neighbors at a marijuana store. And the location in the Bonneville gave them a little bit more privacy. In Stevenson, they're on the main drag. So everyone can see everybody's car in that parking lot. So that may have an impact on the sales. But overall, they couldn't get a better lease deal. It was the right thing to move. The landlord just wasn't willing to work with them. So they really have a whole lot of choice.
Josh, have you ever secured a balance sheet?
I was not able to secure a balance sheet.
So that's an issue. We need to see a balance sheet. How do you know the debt?
The debt's not able to get with a budget to action.
You can't really properly analyze their financial position without a balance sheet.
Rest assured, the board is on it, and there's a they're on it. There's a meeting tomorrow, and they're on it.
They're
working to get this together.
There are things I asked for that just weren't furnished to me. There are things I asked for that was furnished in a way that made it difficult for me to analyze the data or work with it. That cost a lot of waste in getting this report done. So at the end of the day, I didn't want to continue to build the PDA for my time if it wasn't going to get us anywhere, so I just did the best with what was given. But I feel like there's some obfuscation that was occurring.
I wasn't meaning to complain about your report.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I get it. I need an excellent report. That'd be critical.
And I 100% agree with you, Ken. It's an issue that we still have not been burning a balance sheet. Because that's what a buyer's going to want to see.
Yeah.
Yep.
Page 7 of the report here features sales including taxes collected relative to the expenses. The way the spreadsheets were set up is it was very convoluted for me to try and separate those two, so to not create a syntax error when generating a graph, I just kept it all together for simplicity's sake. Ideally, we would like to see the red line smaller than the black line.
I think there's two of them in there that are that way.
Simply put, like the store is spending money they don't have. They floated these expenses with loans that they had no business taking on. They did not follow their financial rules and procedures when it came to doing a debt analysis, when it came to actually analyzing whether or not it was responsible to take on this debt, and the financial policies explicitly state loans cannot be used for floating the business. It can't be used for day-to-day operation. That's what these loans went towards.
And did the board approve these loans?
So this is really complicated. So one loan was procured to pay the Spencer's off. It was a refinance deal to pay the Spencer's off. The Spencer's refused payment for that loan. That money should have been given back to the creditor. It was not. It was used without a vote of the board to float day-to-day operation. That money was misappropriated. It was never voted to be used for that use. The funds were misused.
What legal authority did the lender have to refuse payment? Was there a no prepay or something on the note that...
There was a disagreement about how much was owed. And from what I understand, I probably shouldn't actually use the word refuse payment. There was a disagreement about the payment, and from what I understand, the business decided to rescind the payback offer. So it was an unresolved issue.
And meanwhile, this is bearing a considerable interest load, isn't it?
10% APR.
Yeah. clients. And that's a lot of debt service that continued on because they weren't able to pay it.
Exactly. And again, this speaks to the concept of interest that I covered in my previous report when the two of those previous board members had a relationship with that creditor. So again, those funds were misused, and I don't know why. I don't know what rational person would make that kind of financial decision. As a business owner, I don't understand why that decision would have been made.
You know, the original loan, they wouldn't give them the loan unless they rented out the space.
One of the original loans, way back when this thing was getting started, one of the parameters of this loan being extended was that space was to be also rented from the creditor.
And it's important to note that the city... Now, let me tell you this. Here's something else. And it's important to note that the city had issue with that. And the administrator at the time wanted to be on record and called out that conflict and that issue. I mean, he was very adamant that that was a conflict and an issue. And then there's more history after that. It was in a written statement that he wanted on the record. He wanted on the record that it was a conflict and an appearance of fairness. And they went the whole long and did it anyways. Except for...
And I believe the city at that time did have an offer to the board to rent space here for $100 a month.
That's correct.
And that offer was rejected, and they chose to go with I think it was $500 a month, $500 or $400 a month for the space over there, which they only used once a quarter. $1,500 is a really expensive meeting.
And I think it's important that Ken knows that, Ken, there's a thread here that that it's going to go to court, but there's a thread here that we're not pulling that yet, but there's some issues. And one of the biggest concerns as we've been digging in is, I mean, the state auditor alone is going to have a field day with this thing. So continue on, Judge. Sorry.
So if the organization is going to survive, there needs to be some immediate cost saving measures that need to be implemented, and I've kind of outlined that in my recommendations, which I'll get to for shortly. But I was looking at some of the large big ticket expenses that they had in 2019. This is page 8. So they spent $5,300 a year in that office lease agreement. That's utilities and rent. That is not going to be returning for the year 2020. That agreement has been terminated. Then they also paid $30,610 in rent for the original office location. That expense is not coming back. So right there's about savings of $36,000. That's not coming back for 2020, which is good news. However, we still lost $51,000 last year, so there's still $16,000 that we need to come up with in cost savings.
And you can tell, Josh, the sales are about what they were last year. It is lower.
Yeah, sales are pretty flat.
So it isn't continuing to go down.
Yeah. Sales are flat, the cost of stores open way longer than us. I can't imagine what their expenses are like because they're burning through payroll, being open from 9 to 11 o'clock at night. That's not sustainable. It's not sustainable that we're open from 9 to 9. So at the bottom of page 8, I have a chart here from proposed cost savings. The first thing is we need to reduce staff compensation. We spent $131,818 in 2019 on payroll expenses. This does not include the executive director. So for 2020, I propose to the board that they cut that by about 33% to get it down to $86,538. that comes in the form of reducing our operating hours, which I'll go into further detail in the recommendation. The next suggestion is that we restructure the executive director position. And obviously, because we're talking about an individual, I think that's a rather sensitive matter, so I don't want to discuss that necessarily on the public.
Well, you're talking about a position. You can talk about the position.
Yeah. So we would restructure that position, reduce the pay, make it hourly. There were concerns about attendance that we heard from people, so it doesn't sound like reducing the hours is going to be much of an issue. The other recommendation that I've had is, so the PDA chose to pay into PERS, and I want to preface this information was given to me by the executive director. So according to the executive director, they currently pay 12% of an employee's salary into the PERS account. Whether they move to Social Security, they could pay 6% of the person's salary into Social Security, not PERS. So one of the things that we can look at doing is shifting from PERS to Social Security. That would save on additional payroll expenses. So with these proposed changes, that's about an additional $93,000 for the family savings.
Wouldn't it actually less than that, Josh? Because you're also reducing the salary that the PERS is based on. So,
yeah, it would be.
So you're gonna. So that's a little over $100,000. So actually, that proposal for the Social Security would be under 10. It'd be more like 7.
Yeah,
it would. That's even more savings.
Yeah. So being
conservative. Yeah, very good, Jim. Good catch.
Being conservative, we found all up between expenses not returning and expenses that we can cut back on, $129,000 in potential savings for year 2020. That was easy. So this is kind of where I get to the recommendations. So the first recommendation, simply that we reduce store hours. I have some proposals here for the reduced store hours. I gave those to the board. They, I believe, are going to be debating those tomorrow at their meeting. But simply put, I don't think we'll be open at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday in the winter.
Busy employees expressed that there were busy times and quiet times?
They did. I asked a lot of them. I asked all of them, do you think reducing the hours would have an impact on the business? Just the amount of customers coming in. And the consensus that I got from them was as long as we communicated effectively with our clientele, it shouldn't be an issue. The one thing I asked for that I really wish I had was I asked for a breakdown of sales by hour each day, an average, so I can get an average look at, okay, how much are we selling at 9 a.m.
The rest
of the
They're doing their work on the laptop.
He'll get through.
You should have heard the answer we heard both at the board meeting over why we couldn't keep the network.
So, and I want to say that they were tracking this in the beginning.
They were tracking it the beginning of the 2 years that they made money.
Yeah. The board stopped holding the executive director accountable for executing the duties of the job. And when that happened, the business started losing money. But the fact that I wish I could have come to the board and said with cold hard facts and figures saying, hey, you sold X amount of dollars on average 9 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
There's no need to be open at this time. I wish I could have made a fact-based recommendation there. But that data simply was not provided to me. And then on the day of the PDA meeting, we got this spreadsheet that showed some hourly data, hourly sales data, but it wasn't very complete. It didn't feature weekends, and I wasn't disclosed what the actual scope of that look was.
I'm confused. They used for cash box, but they didn't have a register.
So they came with a little iPad, a little point of sale system.
It should.
I have not come across a point of sale system that does not do that.
Exactly. And now
ship to ship, employee.
Yeah. Now, what's important to understand, everybody, what's important to understand is we're only getting all this we don't have from one person. It's probably all there. But we're being told that they don't. But that's one person. Josh is getting inside and finding out.
The hours are part of this agreement between myself and the executive director. They felt that the store should continue to be open. And I said, well, let's look at the numbers. And the numbers never showed up. So I think this was, again, I can't speak to intent here, but what it felt like to me was, you may be making a recommendation that I disagree with, I'm just not going to give you the information you need to make that as strongly as possible. That's what it felt like.
You still want to go forward with this, Jermaine?
I
believe so. I'm not entirely sure. They've researched a lot of different systems. And
so the data may be there, it's just they're not either providing it, or maybe they're not.
Or simply they don't know how to access it.
Right.
But either way, that's the issue. Because if you don't know how to access it, you don't have your thumb on the pulse of the business. You don't know what the business temperature is. You've got to be making active management decisions if this thing is going to survive. Meeting once a quarter and saying, everything looks okay, is not. That's a surefire way to hit this thing.
The best business managers I've seen are the ones that take that data to bed with them every single night.
Amen. Exactly. And that's what we should have been doing. And I don't know why this got as far as it did. I think 2018 should have been huge wake-up call for that board.
Well, we tried. We had them in here.
Oh, I know. I was here. And I think you guys, tried to give them a bit of a leash here and say, okay, you guys tell us you're going to turn this around. But when I got in there and actually looked, nothing. Same old business as usual. So depending on how the restructure of the executive director position shakes out, it would be prudent to move from PERS to Social Security. That's going to take a so the executive director position should be restructured to an hourly rate, and all work should be done at the store in the back. Visibility has been a huge issue. It's been a documented issue for a very long time. So the employees do not see the executive director. They need to be visible. They need to be behind the back counter with the employees. And also we need to make holiday pay, so pay time off. I also suggested that the store
implement more stringent inventory control measures. Right now, all of the product is just in the back of the shop, unlocked, available to anyone. That was not the letter opposition from the executive director, who said she didn't see a need for it. This comes from the personnel who just had to let someone go because they let a customer in the back of the store, into the store unattended. So this is a great example of why the inventory needs to be controlled. The less people who have access to excess stock, the better. So inventory should be taken at the beginning and end of each shift, and the executive director should be responsible for ensuring that there's enough product on the store floor to get them through the day. But leaving it all unlocked in the back, I mean, I worked at the movie theater and they locked up popcorn bags that were like fractions of a cent.
And you met opposition?
No.
So, in speaking separately with the executive director, so her frustration with that was thinking that there wasn't, with cutting payroll hours, that there wasn't going to be time every day to do an inventory. Now, if everything in the back is locked, you're not talking about inventory all that, too. You're talking what is put out for the day, right?
Inventory the floor.
Yeah.
And then you can inventory the back because one person has the key to it. And
yeah.
You limit access.
Especially if you didn't have to open it every day.
Because right now they do a full inventory quarterly, but I mean when you think of how many hours it takes, that would be something like
But if you can't compare that against sales,
exactly.
What good is that?
And then how can you control the money if you're not controlling the inventory against sales? How do we know how much money we're supposed to have? I know. And how do you know that the till is right when you come on after I left?
Well, since they're not doing that either.
Procedure.
Very clear, though.
Yeah.
Why all this happened the way it happened.
Yeah.
It's a wonder it made it too clear.
The other recommendation I have is, this is real simple. Require employees to electronically clock in and out. Right now, they fill out their time cards on a sheet of paper.
And that brings up a quick other point. I get an email at 9:30 on Sunday morning. Steve happens to go to the thing. The store is not open. Nobody's at the store. And so he gets a hold of the executive director. The storeroom was up at 10:30, I believe. There was a snafu in the thing, but we don't, without somebody punching, we don't know. I mean, what did they put on their timesheet?
I don't know if they did that.
Yeah, as long as they'll got some.
And so if it just happened that you saw that Sunday, how many other days did that happen? And then how can they justify if that store didn't open up to 10:30 that they need to be open at 9?
And again, I feel like the executive director also needs to clock in and out.
Yeah.
Agreed.
There's a concern about visibility here. You're working when you're in the store, you clock in and out with the rest of everyone. That's why you go into hourly wage.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, electronic based clock in and clock out. Real simple. Again, net opposition to that.
Wonder why.
The next recommendation is I really think the PDO board should require approval before hiring and terminating employees. We've got a couple of employees that have been let go. And I think if there's an issue in the store that is big enough to warrant someone losing their job about it, the board should know, because, again, this is such a highly regulated industry, it's highly scrutinized, the board should know if there's something going on that's bad enough that warrants someone losing their job. It protects the executive director, it protects the board.
I'd say that's a board decision, because you still want separation of power between the executive and the you know, elected official or appointed official.
Yes.
So, and for liability purposes, you wouldn't necessarily want the governing board to be making hiring and firing decisions.
Yes.
That should be the executive director. Mm-hmm. But as far as
they should be aware
of policy, they should have a policy that the executive director report all hiring and firing decisions promptly to the board.
Okay.
So they wouldn't be making those decisions, but yeah, they would be governing the decisions,
yeah,
as the oversight body.
Okay.
So that's just a technicality, but from a lawyer perspective, that's how I'd like to. Now, if I were representing them, which I am not, be sure that's on the record.
You guys got the record.
Feels a little over attorney.
I'm under. I appreciate that insight. Thank you. And also, overtime. They spent a lot of overtime this year. A family business system needs to be spending overtime. So overtime pay really needs to be under control. This recommendation may fall into kind of the same parameters as the other one. But $3,600, I mean, it's small-ish in the grand scheme of things, but at this point, every dollar counts. Every penny counts.
So if that's just staff management, why would they be in overtime? They've set office hours. It's not as if they're going to go out on call or something.
From what I understand is that if you worked on a holiday, so if you worked on like Martin Luther King Day or something, for example, you were getting paid 10.5 to that.
Right.
Part-time
people.
Requiring that. So I think it was a misunderstanding of the law. So we're, I guess, being overly generous with working on holidays.
Yeah.
But, and I want to make sure I'm not out here saying we should try and nickel and dime the employees here at the store, but if we don't make some really tough decisions in regards to our payroll expenses, there's not going to be a paycheck for these folks to be nickel and dimed on in a couple of months.
Well, we need to strip it down, take it back to the basics, wait to see the numbers, and then increase from there as far as wages, times, you know, and be able to justify it for sales as well, you know. So if we see a need for more to be open earlier because people are requesting it, then you know, you get enough people to get enough sales for an extra hour or 2 hours, then you supply more hours to the people.
And we can adjust the business as necessary. In the summer, it may make sense to have more extended hours. There's more tourists coming through the gorge. There's more opportunity to capture those dollars. But right now in the winter, it's locals.
Have a seasonal...
Yeah.
Hours.
Seasonal hours. Winter hours. Like the Chevron.
And remember, the goal is we're not looking long term. We're looking at short term to get it to be a break even, or as they say in business, a going concern, so that we can put it on the market.
Because like I have brought up, it's like most capital, you know, the people that buy want 3 times your net. 3 to 5 is the most they'll get of your profit.
Occasionally, you like to see a balance sheet.
Right. But if you only make, let's say, $20,000, if you start making money, you don't make enough, your sales price still ain't going to be enough in order to pay off your debt and come out of debt.
Well, yeah, you need debt service because you're buying a business. So it's either ROI or debt service.
Right. And when somebody buys us out, we got to pay off those creditors we got.
Well, yeah.
No. And so you're going to walk away with no money unless you've got to generate a profit. You have to generate at least $100,000, let's say, or something.
You have to start that. debt too.
Yeah, in order to retire the debt, sell it, but the city gets any money.
And the debt is a troublesome issue here.
Yes.
There's one room that doesn't actually have a vote of the board.
Yep.
No revolution.
So that's the donation at that point in time?
Mm-hmm. Was the resolution?
I'm not sure how the legality of that shows.
Oh, Ultra Virus. Did the executive director, I assume somebody signed the note. Was it the executive director?
Actually, the signed the note was the president of the board, who was the partner of the creditor.
So the president of the board signed the note individually?
Yeah, with the secretary. And the other thing that's very important to understand is the wording changed in the notes. The beginning notes had very clear understanding that you're not buying a piece, you have no right to any part of the business, and also explaining that this is a government operation, basically government quasi-entry. That was removed in the second parts of the loans that were given to one creditor. That whole phrase was taken out. There was also a phrase in there that quite least basically said that any of the heirs of the creditor had rights to, you know, and a contract had rights to whatever, that was taken out. And I think just for a technicality, because some of the heirs were sitting on the board. I mean, knowing that they would go into court and an heir would have it, if they were heirs to a debt, they would get it anyways, but it was taken out of the original contracts. And I think there was a reason. I don't know. This is my speculation. Because I don't know why they really gutted the wording in those contracts in the last two loans. And the one loan that Josh was talking about, we found no resolution. We found no vote of the board. It was just mentioned that, hey, we got some extra money from this creditor to help us along. The second loan was taken out, and it was taken out under resolution, but the resolution stated to pay a creditor off. The creditor didn't agree with the money. Said, "This, I don't think this is right," so it was asked back. Their legal counsel advised them to return the money to the creditor, but the money wasn't. It never went back to the board for a decision. It just went into the fund. They used it. Again, there's that string, that thread that we're not really wanting to pull at right now. That's going to have to be all worked out later. We just want to make sure we get this thing under control and in the black so we can get it gone.
Yeah, the priority is the health of the business.
Yes.
Like, there have been some really cool decisions that have been made under some questionable pretenses. Again, speaking to the conflict of interest between the board members and that creditor. Just not a good look. And then for that money to show up being misused without a vote of the board.
Oh, and I just want to make one other statement for the record. When the city administrator at the time went in and said that he believed there was a conflict of interest with the board president being related or being in a relationship with one of the creditors, and the creditor saying, "I will not lend you the money unless you rent my building," he states it just that way in his, he wanted on the record. Shortly after that, when they voted on it the next meeting to vote on that board member that he called out, recused himself for proprietary reasons. But then later picked up and then got back involved in after the board's changed in running and getting these other loans. So, on record,
never recused himself again. Yeah.
Again, I shouldn't be pulling my best thread.
The last recommendation I have for the PDA board was that they need to create some time-based measurable goals here. That's how we're going to know if this thing is going to be salvaged, if we're going to be able to move it through to a sale, or if we're going to just take a drastic measure. Because I don't think it should just go on for another year without some checkers here. So if the PDA chooses to keep me on board as a consultant, I can help them create some of those goals. And hopefully, I'll be able to present those to you maybe on a monthly or every other month basis, so you guys know what's going on. I don't think you guys should be kept in the dark about what's been going on with that business. I think a lot of your fears were kind of borne out, unfortunately, in this report. But I still believe this can be turned around. And to kind of illustrate my point here, on page 12, I took the cost savings that we found, the payroll savings, the restructuring savings, and I took the loss from last year, and I just added those savings to the loss. So the red line is 2019's actual loss. Had those changes that I'm proposing now been implemented at the beginning of the year, this business could have been in the black for the tune of about 70 grand. That's the disappointing thing about this, is that there was an opportunity to turn it around a year ago. There was an opportunity to start paying attention to what was happening to the business. And that did not happen. It was just business as usual. It was not looking at the numbers. It was just flying blind because they thought the money was always going to be there as a loan. You can't run a business on loans. Eventually, the whole thing's going to crash and burn. So again, there's some really tough decisions in front of the PDA board. But if they have the courage to make those decisions, this business can be turned around. It can be sold for a profit.
Good.
Any questions?
We're enlightening.
Thank you for giving us the answers we've been requesting for 2 years.
You're right. Sorry that I was still unable to procure a balance sheet.
I think
we've got to get bored and play fast. I think we'll see a balance sheet before long.
If you want to know the answer to a difficult decision, show up tomorrow night.
Sure.
I just had a couple of...
And it's here, right?
Yes.
Now, okay.
I just had a couple of extra things that we could find in savings. We currently do pay about $15,000 a year for health insurance. That wasn't something that I recommended to the PDA that they excise immediately, they get rid of immediately. It was kind of a, you know, do we want to remove PERS or health insurance? If the business doesn't trend the direction we want to see it, that's again additional savings that we can find there.
Does that figure consider the staffing reductions?
So from what I understand, only two people take advantage of the health insurance.
Okay. And those people are staying?
Are still with the... Yeah.
And the health insurance, how does that work? Is that something the PDA has bought for them? Or is it something that they buy and they get reimbursed?
We buy for them.
And it's under a group plan, correct?
Yeah.
Under what?
A group plan, and the fewer people you have, the more expensive it is for the employees.
The employer pays the whole thing, you know, like, it's 50 years.
Yeah, we're understanding employers picking up the tab. But again, I asked for payroll data, and again, this kind of speaks to the waste. I asked for payroll data in Excel format so I could go through and combine it all together so I can run my reports off it. It was provided to me in PDF format, and I was told, this is the other way to get it. Well, I needed an Excel format, so I spent an hour and a half putting it into Excel. The rate I'm charging as a consultant is higher than the hourly rate of your executive director. Again, it's just misuse of resources. So I did that, but there are a lot of other opportunities where I could have gone down that rabbit hole. I just didn't feel right about charging. I mean, it's expensive for data entry.
I couldn't just do that in Excel.
She didn't want to transfer it from PDF.
She didn't want to make it. She had it in Excel in the first place.
In order to put it in
the PDF,
you go from one to the PDF.
Not one to cooperate.
And are you still getting pushed back from this? Executive? Well, okay, I'm not...
There was a lot of pushback at the board meeting last week. There was an incredible amount of pushback when it came to reducing store hours, when it came to reducing expenses, when it came to inventory management. It was just every step of the way. There's a lot of kind of like last minute surprises that came up. Like, I have hourly sales data.
But only for a couple of weeks.
Only for a couple of weeks. Couldn't really answer a whole lot of questions about the specificity of the data. There was, when it came time to talk about restructuring that position, there was all of a sudden an employment contract that came up at the 11th hour that we've since not been able to hunt down. There's just a lot of delay. Oh, I want to run my own report now. It was 2 years to run those reports. You sat with me while I was asking for all this data. This is the report. Why do we need another report at this point in time?
Make sure you don't make a decision until we get another report.
Yeah, and honestly, we don't have time. If this continues down the track for, another month or two, it may be too late. But it's a do-or-die moment. These changes are going to be tough. Hopefully the board implements some of these recommendations. Because, again, I stand by my assertion. It can be possible. We just have to want it to be.
And in closing, Josh, at the meeting, one of the most telling things I heard at that meeting was that the person was asked, how many hours do you need a week to do your job? 40 plus. Said it twice, 40 plus. Then later on, after the recommendations, they were asked again, how many hours can you reduce it to 20? Yeah, I think I can. Can you do everything you're doing in 4? But she just said 40 plus, but now 20 is okay. That was very telling for me, because it was obvious that there really isn't an understanding of how many hours they're needed to work.
And again, if there's no visibility in the store, if it's I'm working from home, there's no accountability there.
Mm-hmm.
And if the business is doing fine, like, you're on a longer leash, because the business is doing well, it's successful, obviously, being an executive leader. But the numbers don't support that. And we need visibility. The employees need visibility. Because if you're not in the store, you don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give me a whole lot of joy to get up and make tough recommendations like this. I wish there was an easier way out of this. And honestly, a year ago, 2 years ago, there was an easier way out. But
they continue down this path, it's a way out of some business. I mean, it's not going to have a job.
So tomorrow's meeting is going to be putting these recommendations in place. Okay. Do we as a council need to do anything here?
No. You're doing now what you need to do.
Yep.
And then these guys have to take the baton.
Well, we wanted to do this 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And,
I think that the mayor hanging on the meeting.
Yep.
That's helpful.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm happy to be a go-between, a liaison between you guys.
We can't afford it.
And
maybe
there you go. Good answer.
And so you guys know what's going on.
Right.
And so you guys are informed, so you can fulfill your oversight responsibilities. Because that is what the previous board made it incredibly difficult for you guys to do. And I've been up here for the better part of a year and one. July of 2018. I've watched this rigmarole for a while. I understand your frustration, and I think it's incredibly unfair, and hopefully those days are behind us.
Amen.
That's all going to be the beginning of this. There's going to be numbers. Everything's transparent up front. He's going to get the numbers monthly. It's not going to be any question.
Thanks, Josh. Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, I don't want to. My concern is I don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. I mean, Josh has a lot of background now in this, and I think it might behoove you guys to, even if city pays something for his liaison. I don't think you're going to over liaison the
I think we are.
Situation.
Yeah, that's something that we'll talk about because he's been working hard and he's doing a good job. And Josh is, let me just say this last thing, Josh. He's very calm and collective, but Josh has told me in no uncertain terms, Brian, if we don't make changes, it's got to go to receiver because it's going to be sold by April.
Because I mean, that's going to be my next point.
Right.
The cost of Josh is going to be just a tiny cost compared to my cost. It's putting
absolutely
in receivership.
Absolutely.
That's a court proceeding, and you're right. Looking at 5 to 10,000 just to really get a roll.
That's over lowering.
No, you're right, Ken. You're absolutely right. So that's something that I will look into and bring to council. But yeah, we can use Josh here a little bit. It'll help.
Now to get this M plan and his recommendations to get this turned around so we don't have to go into receivership, and I think that'd be the best course of action.
Absolutely. That is clearly the best path forward. You can do it. And I mean, ultimately to sell it, I have to go to court, but it could just be an uncontested hearing that just go to the judge and say, Your Honor, everybody, this is the path forward. It's going to, the creditors will all be paid, the state will get something out of this, and it'll get out of this public domain, and the judge will just go like that, because nobody would care.
And I just want to say, so the CDA hired me as a consultant to do this report, so I was compensated for that. And I will provide the PDA tomorrow with an hour-by-hour breakdown of the work I did, when I did it, so there's transparency. And if the PDA chooses, I'm more than happy to continue working.
And there's no, like Ken said, there's no reason why the city has a lead, because we need to know, we need to have our finger on it, and so the reports, we can use it a little bit to help too. There's nothing that says we can't do that.
And we got that on the agenda that'll help the PDA tonight.
Right. We have, if we haven't scared her off. Okay.
Thank you so much for your time. I realize that was a long report.
Josh, we thank you. For a guy that went in and got... You got probably about 40% of what you needed, and to come up with a report that's 100% cool, I commend you.
The only guy I asked for next one is to have pop-ups.
I had a nice PowerPoint presentation, but we couldn't find a power cord.
Yeah, for the TV.
No power cord for the PowerPoint.
Yeah, I'll have one again. Yes, sir. Hi, Howard. Yes, Dad. Yeah,
you see where you were.
Okay, thank you, Josh.
That's probably a good thing.
Should we move on then? Move on? Okay, thanks. So we'll start with excusing Judy.
I'd like to make a motion to approve Judy Whitcomb for the January 14th, 2020 meeting.
Excuse her?
Yeah.
I'll second it.
All right. Any further comment? Question? No, I hear none. I'll call for the vote.
Yes.
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 Now, I will state this. I didn't get a request from Margie, but I did see Margie was in some kind of big test today. She was being, it didn't sound good. I saw it on her thing. So, would you like to excuse her?
I make a motion to approve Margie Lee for the January 2014-2020 meeting.
I second it.
Excusing her?
Yes, Margie.
excused. All right. Thank you.
Approve the excusal.
There you go. Thank you. Excusal. Is that a word?
I don't know. I just made it up.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to call for the vote.
Yes.
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 I'll call Webster's tomorrow and get it in there.
Okay. And the next part of new business, we have a person, Jermaine LaFleur. She's a local resident. I sat and talked with her. Just a gracious lady to sit here and listen to all of us. She would like to join the PDA board. So you, in front of you, you have her.
Yep,
letter. And I thought maybe if you'd want to ask her a question or two, she would like to be approved to be on the PDA board. And I recommend her. Or what is the word I need, Ken? Not recommend. What do I?
Nominate.
I nominate her.
We got to do a resolution, yeah. Or just
no? If she wants to, you want to ask her some questions?
Yeah.
Yeah. My phone's real warm right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you just introduce yourself.
Yeah. My name is Jermaine LaFleur, and I've been a resident since. Gosh, I think I've been here 3 years now, just about 2.5 years, that's one of the, I have not participated a whole bunch in community activity or community, but I would appreciate the opportunity to serve on the PDA as a part of the youth service back to North Bonneville in some capacity. I do have a lot of experience through my career in things like, you know, looking at ways to improve the businesses, cost-benefit analysis, lots of Excel, PowerPoint, all that stuff. I use all that stuff on a daily basis. So I'm good with numbers, good with doing analysis, good with people. The other thing that excites me about the PDA reason is that it could also be used in the future for applying for grants for other things besides just the current business that we're in with Stevenson, that we could actually maybe possibly do things to better the community through grants and things in the future. So the PDA can do a lot more than just that. Just what we have in front of us right now. So.
Do you have any retail background?
I do not. That's one thing I don't have. Yeah. I've not run a business like in that level.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and what do you do?
Mary has
one person on the board of retail. It's still retail dominated, but great. You got the numbers part of it.
Yeah.
But it's really good to ask somebody with some retail.
Yeah.
So where do you currently, are you currently working now in these?
I'm currently working at In-Situ. I work in the factory as an industrial engineer, so we do capacity analysis, layout, you know, logistics and flow of products and that sort of stuff. Try to figure out how to make things more efficient, etc.
They're speaking another language here.
So it says here, but do you really understand the work at hand? I mean, this is.
Well, she didn't leave.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, you're in it to win it. I'll take that.
Any other questions?
Looks like there's a lot of challenges, but looks like there's good people wanting to do good.
There's been a lot of challenges with them for the last 2 years, and it looks like the challenge is over between us, and hopefully we can make this turn into something good for everybody. So, thank you.
Anybody else?
I have all my questions.
Okay, thank you.
Good, fair check.
Then I think I'm going to vacate the premises.
You can vacate. Should we real quick do a vote?
Oh!
You're good. So, all in favor of putting Jermaine LaFleur on the board, say aye.
Aye.
You hear no opposed? Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can be excused.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one. All right, moving on. Yeah, okay. So, moving forward, we have to pick a mayor pro temp. That time.
Hey, I want to start off by nominating John Acton, because I've interacted with him a lot. Not a lot, but on some respects, I admire his maturity and his desire to be a part of this community and what he's doing. And I have sat with him for a few minutes and got his input on his desire to be a pro temp, and I think he'd be a good man to step in the position.
I agree.
So I nominate John Acton.
I second.
Okay. All in favor of John Acton being mayor pro temp, say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. You are the mayor pro temp. Congratulations.
Three.
There was.
Majority of the.
It was. He can vote.
Two
out of three.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That way, I didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, he did. Yeah, I heard them all.
Confirming that all three voted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But really, we only need two.
Show of hands.
Majority of the whole body.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. All right. So, yes.
Yeah. He just says majority, and I always read that to mean the majority of the whole body.
Okay, Ken. I stand corrected. But yeah. So, congratulations.
Thank you. You're the swing vote.
Right?
Good thing I didn't
say. Okay, but we'll
be in trouble.
Moving on to ordinance 1122, amending chapter 604, animal control.
I'd like to make a motion to approve ordinance 1122, amending chapter 6.04, animal control.
Any other? Again, I get a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Any questions? Basically, let me just explain real quick. Our leash laws, leash meant a certain thing up to recently, and some people think that an electronic collar is a leash, electronic leash. It is not, and we've been having issues. So this clarifies what a real leash is based on what our
laws,
what our municipal code has said for many years, and what the intent of that word was meant to be. So we just spelled it out.
And also clarifies what a public place is, adds more things. But public place is like and item C puts in another whole section because we couldn't find anywhere other than in our, what do you call it, uniform for the state, you know, the litter control thing. And it doesn't specifically say anything about pets or somebody else will have to throw something.
So, like, it's just in the nuisance?
It's under, yeah. But all we had to take care of dogs going to the bathroom was in a uniform litter control act or something. It didn't spell it out.
And it didn't spell out animals, just
so
the litter.
It spells out, you got to take up after your dog.
So that would be even people who are just visiting.
Yep.
Exactly.
It's anybody.
That's on city property, right?
I
don't have
any public
property as defined in.
So I don't have to do it on mine. I'm just saying.
No.
Or my neighbors.
No.
No. This is on
mine. You can do it. You can step in out of that. Although we do have a nuisance code that says that if the neighbor's dog come in the yard, yeah, and does something, that is a violation of city codes. But your own dog can do. You can stack it if you want. Learn to smell to your neighbors. Because we do have a code against that. Okay. Okay. Any further questions?
No, but I think.
No, but.
Is this going to be an issue for somebody that sees somebody doing it? Can we approach them and you know, not point a finger in their, hey, you're not doing what the city code, and you know, people rebel at that kind of thing.
Let me tell you what happened. We had a gentleman that is in town running his dog on a regular leash. He had somebody come up to him that their dog wasn't on a leash, and the dog came running up to him, and when he hollered, hey, we got a city code that says it's got to be on a leash, the person yelled back at him, this is electronic leash. So for that purpose, I define this because I have been called out. Electronic leashes aren't leashes; they're electronic collars.
Right.
They're not a leash.
They're still running at large.
And they're running at large. So we just wanted to clarify. But it gives us more. It gives us more of a leg to stand on when we say it says leash controlled, holding in your hand to the collar, some kind of a strap or chain or something.
Is there
the things
a minimum length of leash you have to have?
No.
People that have more leashes that go from here to 20-50 feet.
Controlled leash, you know. I mean, they're on rollers and stuff, and they can draw those back in really quick, you know. But I think if it's controlled, if a dog's on a leash to a collar, you have control of that dog. no matter how long it is. But you should be, if you're paying attention to your surroundings, you should be reeling that sucker in when you're approaching.
Now, what about this, like going across the leashes, going across the public sidewalk and into a public area, and they're laying their dog in a public area on the leash from their door with this really long leash used backwards?
There's a.
As long as they go pick it up.
Well, they still got to pick it up now and then.
And it's got to be controlled. It's 5 days after the time you're
in. They're on this really long leash in the middle of Highland Lash. And they're standing at their door with their dog.
The main thing about this is, here's the deal. I had an issue here recently where an older lady that we know and love, she had a probably 130-pound dog come running up to her, and it scared her to the point where she almost fell over. And when she talked to the owner said, "Oh, it's friendly." But how the heck do you know a 130-pound dog come running at you when you're a short little lady? Is friendly. They have to be able to where they can control it and not. Where it does not, because I saw a case in Seattle where a woman, same thing, was frightened by a dog that ran up to her. She fell back, hit her head, and got severe head injury. And the owner was required to pay even all her medical bills and some, even though they were claiming the dog's friendly. Doesn't matter.
That's right.
People don't know it. People are afraid. It's got to be under control. If people understand that, it's not going to come any farther if you hold that line.
What are the enforcement mechanisms, and are there penalties for non-compliance?
Yes. And yes. There's a $100 fine. Am I correct, Tom? It was a $100 fine?
It's $100 plus. Let's see.
He is 100,
right? He is 100 plus cost, including attorney fees.
So if we have to lawyer up, get you to pick up dog food. Yeah, we have foundation dog.
We need to do, and that's the next thing we need to define in our code, is some kind of somebody that can write those kind of fines.
Pat should be.
Yeah, Pat would do it.
And that would be reported to the city?
Yes.
Call Brian personally.
Yes. Yes. Call me. They call. They call me on the weekends. I get called a lot. The most important thing about our city code, and I agree with what I 100% agree about, if you're going to make a complaint, you do it in writing, and you have to, it states in there that you have to be willing, you can do it anonymous, but if it goes further, you have to testify based on your thing, so you just can't be writing out.
You can't just hand in
bogus things.
Or videotape.
Now that's happened before, and then I've been able to go over and catch it and tell the people that's okay. And they send me, they give me pictures and say this dog runs free. I go over there, dog runs free. I can tell the people that. But I'm talking about an incident like where it comes at somebody or whatever. That's something different.
Okay.
If you really want to report it, you can stay anonymous unless it needs to go to court or something happens. Then you're gonna have to be able to, if we call you as a witness.
Well, of course, that's also, it would help a plaintiff's attorney to have this ordinance, because if somebody is violating a law and somebody's injured, it's something called negligence per se.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your proof easier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it improves a person's ability to get compensated if they get hurt because somebody's violating the law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a sort of a sideways enforcement mechanism, but it helps,
yeah. And quite frankly, Washington has some very stringent dog or animal laws against, if animal hurts somebody, that, for anything, like scaring somebody, that they have some very strict laws on that. That the owner of that dog is going to, or animal is going to pay for that. So the main thing is we want to make sure that people walking in the park and they got their dog on a leash, that they don't have another dog come running up and somebody's saying, "Well, it's on an electronic leash." No, we don't have invisible leashes here. That wasn't the intent in the 80s when they put this together, and it's not the intent now. So that's what we just wanted to show.
Okay.
Okay. That gave the gap for the scoop and everything too, because we didn't have anything. So
yeah.
It's in that section. Why not clean it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clean it up. Yeah. It's a cleanup. It's a cleanup.
Yeah,
it's
clean.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No.
You know, the question, I'm going to call for a vote.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, moving on. We move on to Ordinance 1123, amended, Chapter 2.08, appointed offices.
I'd like to make a motion on Ordinance Number 1123, amending Chapter 2.08, appointed offices.
Thank you. Basically, on a quick thing, we had sitting on in our ordinances, we had two appointed offices that were non, how, what I call those, Tom, they're not, we don't say non-union, but they're
exempt.
And that's kind of, we had an office manager and we had a city clerk slash treasurer, and we don't have an office manager anymore. I'm kind of the everything, so we don't need that position on the books anymore. And Deanna's kind of absorbed a lot of that work. We have our person that's our administrative assistant. That
she is a part
of the bargaining unit, our bargaining thing. But so what we decide, what we thought is, let's combine, get rid of that city, that office manager, and just combine the city clerk treasurer and the office manager in one position. Give her a nice, a newer position that's held a little bit more, because she's taking more responsibility, and call her a, what was it?
Chief
administrative officer. A CAO. That's it. So we're just removing a position that we just don't need anymore, and that would be the office manager, and combining it with our city clerk. Well, you're actually doing more, but anyways. Any questions? Hearing none, I'm right. Cool.
Did we already?
I'm going to call for a vote.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Number 1124, amending Chapter 1.05, Mayor Councilor Compensation. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve Ordinance Number 1124, Chapter 1.05, Mayor and Councilor Compensation.
A second.
Thank you. And basically, what I'm asking for in this is, I don't get any benefits, and I don't want to raise, but I would like to get, like others, I pay for my insurance. I'd like to get a stipend to help me cover my medical insurance.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a raise, but okay.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, in a way.
So so that's it. Any questions, comments, or otherwise?
No?
No.
Come on, guys. You can't be this easy. No? Okay. I'll call for the vote.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I did put it in the budget.
That's okay, good.
I did put it. It is in the budget.
Oh, look at you, already pre-spent.
Well, I pretty well, yeah.
Thinking ahead.
Okay, moving on. I'm sorry. Resolution 537, amending Resolution 528, Exhibit B and C, Water and Sewer Fees. It's that time of year. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve Resolution Number 537 for the water and sewer fees.
I second.
Thank you. And basically, once a year we put fees together. The most important thing about these fees, we're raising our water and sewer fees by 5.6% as an overall, which is below most.
Way better than the PUD.
And actually, Ken Cozier, there, Stevenson, there, they went by 37%. But
who did?
Stevenson.
Well, and then I got that money on the back. I
and I'm
one of every city
in the region. Yeah, so we did some, Tom did some research and give you some comparisons. And on this, the only place that's lower than we are as far as our base rates go is Clark County.
And I think they just went up.
And they did.
So we're real close to Yakima, but you can see on that, based on on this form, you can see all the cities, and we are still one of the lowest. These are their base rates. Okay? Now, what we did do, though, is we're way behind in our hookups for, like, industrial hookups.
Yes.
We were charging $15,000 for an industrial 4-inch hookup, and most cities are charging $300,000-$400,000, because that's a big undertaking for your water hookup. So we changed ours, and it's still lower than many. But here's the deal. County Ridge is going to get going someday here soon, and it's going to be a big industrial, and we're going to need some help. So that, if you're going to build a $10 or $15, $20 million plant up there, a hookup fee of $200,000 is nothing. And most cities, if you look at Vancouver, it's astronomical. What was it down there, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
It's 400 some thousand for a 4-inch line, water line.
And the way to think of this too is, in the gorge, we got urban growth boundaries. We can't annex more land. We've only got so much vacant land. And once you get, think of it like an impact, you know, once you get your hookup fees, it goes to replace your infrastructure. Once all those hookups are done, there won't be no more. And so the only way you're ever going to get that money to offset, to pay for your wear and tear on your infrastructure, would be through the rates, which means your rates would have to go sky high. Unless you make new connections pay their fair share of what that cost is.
And
so, and we've just been way under.
And thank you to this council, just to let you know, is water and sewer, the water and sewer reserve, we put that into a separate fund now. And water and sewer, right now, the water and sewer fund has almost $170,000 sitting in it.
Right.
When I calculated the budget, that's your question, I didn't calculate the new rates. I calculated it at last year's rates.
Yeah.
So any money that what I'm wanting to do is, by the time I leave office in a couple of years, I would like to see that fund at about $300,000 or $350,000, so that there's money to put in a lift station if you need it.
Right.
Or get grants, because they love it.
If you got money to match, the main line replaced.
Yeah, and that
replace the transite line.
Yeah.
Lift stations.
If you can go in front of a grant committee and say, this city can pay 20% of what it, but we need a grant for 80, they're very receptive. The problem is, we've only been able to offer 4-3% on most projects because we haven't got a lot of money. So if we have a chunk of change, that helps us. And the two main things that we need is, we need one more lift station, and we need that transit line coming out of our reservoirs. That thing is old and it needs to be replaced, and that's probably about $1.1 million.
But you still need to set aside money for in 20 years.
Yes.
When you start having 10 years of infrastructure starts getting aged, having that money sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. Once everything gets replaced, you up it a little bit again.
And
leave
it.
You save it.
And if we would have been doing that years ago, setting it aside,
we wouldn't have an issue.
We would have had all those stuff done right now.
But they thought we had extra money. The old previous PDA, they thought they had money.
I will say, let me just say one last thing on this thing too. You guys, I appreciate working with you, because most of your tight wads.
I'm serious.
Raising
the rates
after
PD.
You
could have done it before.
I didn't have nothing to do with PD. But anyway.
I know.
But the important thing is, we take what we have, get the city fixed, make sure everybody has the tools they need, make sure we have the employees we need, which we are in place, and make sure that that the city has enough funds for rainy days. Instead of, I don't know how many years I came to these meetings. Julie will tell you. Julie came to these meetings. It was constant every year. We don't have a dime. Let me tell you. In 2016, this city went into the next year in January 1 with $30,000 in their general fund. That's what they had. We're going into this year with $325,000. In our general fund.
And that's with no hotel revenues.
But what it has to do with is just spending money, like Josh said, wisely, but getting the people the tools that they need to do the work, so we don't have to have outside people coming and doing it.
Yeah.
So, and I'd like to leave out of here with a nice chunk of change in there, so the next mayor coming in will be able to really make things hop with their infrastructure. And the last thing I'm going to say, I got to tell you this: our plant is running at half capacity, and our plant is not that old. Our plant was, the extension was because of Coyote Ridge. We were extended. We're not using but 50% of our plant, and it's still in really good shape. So we have the ability to grow, and our plant is still in good order. So we really need to focus on, what we need to focus on is getting that transite pipe fixed, replaced, and one lift station. And other than that, other than fixing what we need, few water mains, we're doing okay. But like Travis said, and he told me yesterday at the meeting, well, I have to listen to him away from work here, I don't know, but he said, Mayor, if you're going to ask the people for more money, we need to save some. I said, absolutely. We need to save what we can.
That's all I have to say.
Well, good. How about fixing the road up to the water tower?
We're doing that. Well, that'll be next week. Next meeting. Any other questions, guys?
Yeah, are you going to be doing that?
Well, I don't know. It depends on who bids. I hope so. People are talking.
There's no way they're going to beat the bid. That was almost a gift.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'll talk about that next meeting.
Yeah.
That was a gift. 56 loads of rock.
The water thing.
56 loads of rock and everything, and rolling it, a new road, a new gate for $12,000. But we'll talk about it later. Okay, I'm going to call for vote.
Yes.
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 Okay. All right, moving right along. So you have a letter in front of you. The Heritage Trails Foundation has requested a property contract. What they're asking for is what Ken offered to do, and I need a motion.
I make a motion to approve.
Would be a request for Ken to put together a contract.
To put together the Trails Foundation request property contract for Adventure Park.
Okay. So here's what Ken had mentioned at one of the meetings when they were given their proposal, that they really, to have a little meet, to be able to go to people with money, donation, we should do a contract. Am I not correct? A contract? Yeah. And what this is, they've asked, and what I'm asking you to do is to let me ask Ken to put that contract together to look at it for the next meeting. Some kind of a... What do we need, Ken?
Well...
You said it, and I forgot.
Yeah, so they need to be able to go seek grants.
Yes.
They need something of a commitment of the city to really proceed money for the... And so it would be basically outlining the conditions under which the city would give them the seed money. So that, you know, I don't remember all the conditions we were going to impose, but we weren't just going to give them the money.
The most important thing is that we've all agreed upon, and I stand firm on, is they don't get a dime until they have all the money, and the money that the city gives is the final cleanup, whatever.
So everything else. Matching fund.
Exactly. Yeah, a little bit less than a match.
Right. Yeah, and they understood that because I'm on the board.
Yes.
You have to have the money before the city. In other words, the city's going to get a finished product with its money.
Yeah.
It's not the front money, it's the in money.
So what I want you, maybe Tom could send me some, or you can send me some bullets of the things. What are our expectations?
Yep.
And then I can put that all in a contract so to say, they can then take it to their investors or contributors or however they structure it, that says, you know, so they can go to these people and say, we can assure you, and we have the city's, you know, approval of this, that once they meet these conditions, you'll get the money.
And the conditions can even start as we just now have some more bids on specific payments, right?
And the most important...
They need to have... If on the city site, the foundation should have the total cost is going to be X, the city's going to put in Y,
so that'll be budget.
And the foundation is FC. these two have to equal that. Until we get ours, you don't get any.
So you have the details. So the details need to be put into a
they need to have the budget as part of the deliverable. Okay. The total cost is this. The foundation will come up with this much money, and at that point, the city will do this and implement it and become city property.
Okay. And but it's very important, and this is just. But I also made a promise to people that we would hold a couple, at least two or one or two public hearings here to make sure that the public has a right to come in and voice their before it, that would, any contract would be after we have our public hearings.
Or you guys
do they have to have their input? The citizens have to have it.
Well,
input
I can just do it in draft, and then
yes.
That would be.
Yes, it'll reassure our heritage. They're working hard, but reassure them that we're serious about this. But there are some,
and we're having workshops, but that still does not take the place of a public hearing.
Right, where they talk to the shakers and the makers.
Well, you guys make the decision. The public has a chance to
yes.
say yay or
yes.
nay. Even if we have workshops, that's not at your point of decision.
Yep, that's the truth. Okay, so we can do both.
We're at workshops, and the public's been involved, but still, before you make a decision to commit this city to money, they should have the opportunity.
So what I'm asking, so I guess what we do is call a vote on, shall we go forward? Let's have Ken draft this up. It'll just be the draft that we have in front of us that we have to show them. With we'll just have Ken draft it.
Fair enough, okay.
You smell good. I just want to tell you.
Well, thank you.
It's not been a late day, or something. You smell good. So, okay, so I'm gonna
do that. Like a matchstick.
All right.
Right.
All in favor of having Ken put this forward and drawing up a draft for the Heritage Trails, say aye.
Aye.
Here, no applause.
Was there a motion in a second?
Yeah, there was. There was. Okay, moving right on. Now, the PDA has requested, they have asked us. The PDA is, or the business is paying, they pay us about $500 or $600 a month, depending on what their sales are. Is that not correct?
In lieu of sales tax.
And they... Yeah, and they're asking me, they've asked the city, they're asking you, if they can waive that temporarily while they restructure and maybe put it on the back end of this when the thing sells or whatever, but they're asking that they waive it because they're trying to save every nickel they can.
Well, then I would say instead of the word waive, which is affirmative, you're not...
That's kind of the forever, yeah.
I would say...
Suspend.
Which would mean they wouldn't have to pay it for a period, or postpone payments.
Postpone payment, I like that even better.
Better, because that means that it'll approve, but would put it onto the back end. And at that point, you could decide whether you're going to waive it or not.
Yes, but that's a good point.
What it will do is make them track what that money is.
Oh,
and
that's
then,
true, yeah.
Then you'll have that in your account, and then also that'll help you understand really whether that's feasible or not.
So now, is this the actual tax payment, or is this the additional 1.5 that they're giving us because they moved out of our
state? Yeah, they can't. We have no authority to tell them they can't pay the tax. They pay. But this is that 1.5 that we agreed upon for them.
Yeah,
moving.
We lost it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just asking because we need to make a motion on this. I don't want to say to waive tax payment because it's really not a tax payment. It's
in lieu of tax. Yeah, in lieu of tax. Yeah, yeah, in lieu. Again, I wrote it wrong.
Okay.
I'm glad you guys are keeping me honest.
It should be PDA request to postpone payment of monthly
in lieu of tax payments,
I guess.
I'll make a motion to approve the PDA's request to postpone the monthly in lieu tax payments to the city while they're doing a restructuring.
A second.
Any other questions?
No.
I'm going to call for a vote. D?
Yes.
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 Thank you for that, gentlemen. And the final one is what we had talked about earlier. I would like to
get your approval to hire Ken to do above and beyond his call of duty to give us a what is that? It's they call it the Public Records Act.
I mean, for this special thing, for the...
Yeah, but this is special.
Adventure Park?
No. You're coming in early to do us training. That's above and beyond the Call of Duty.
He's authorized me to...
Yeah. Do we authorize him to do that? And he'll give us... I have to get it.
Is it a motion?
Good.
Is it a word or is it all yay?
It's a yay and word. I'm going to... Yeah. So, yeah, we have to do a motion in a second.
Unless you want to ask unanimous consent, and then it's without objection.
Ooh. Now, listen, Jen, don't confuse me, because I just started with the...
Yeah, I know.
So I'm going to give you... Yeah. Okay. So let's go with the motion and...
I make a motion for Ken to come in and do some trainings for the city.
Public records.
Public records meeting.
And meetings.
Meetings, okay.
I second.
Thank you. I'm going to call for a vote on this one. I'm more on.
Yes.
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 Okay, thanks for that. Oh, Ken, we'll just do
that last one. Yeah, whatever works.
Both of you guys.
We'd like to have everybody present.
Yes. But I can't agree. I don't even know if that's ever.
So do we have to do it every 2 years?
Four?
Either
90 days if you're newly elected, or once every 4 years. I don't remember the last time.
You did it last year, but the reason I...
2 years. Yeah, you and I did it 2 years.
Yeah, you did. You know, I got a certificate 2 years ago. But we got newly elected, and at the time, I thought maybe it'd be good because we now have newly elected.
It's good to have a refresh, right?
So we might need reminders.
We'll be here for
new elected. New elected.
Oh,
yeah. So you were newly elected.
I was there for the training, yes.
So maybe you can do that because you just went to the course.
I did.
There's also an online video.
Yeah, I did a test online when I first came to
the campaign. You don't have to be here for that to happen.
No, I mean, you can do it. Also, you can just play that online video. You get that fancy
TV.
If I don't have to pay him, I can afford to buy a better one.
Right. And then you can get that power cord. And do your workshop.
Question that. Okay. Well, one way or the other, already voted, in case we want to use Ken a little bit, we can.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
All right. Great? Okay. All right. We'll move on. Yeah. Will we public comment any? Any? None? Very none. Moving on. Closing council comments?
So I have one question there. Yeah. Sally Spencer's loan that was about to go to default. Did you guys get that worked out?
So I drafted a letter that was sent to them. They have not responded to it. So
how long ago?
A couple weeks ago. About 3 weeks ago now. They have not responded. We indicated in the letter that we were just going to continue with those interest payments until we heard from them. So they have not engaged with the PA.
And it was with all new board members, so that they see that they're dealing with new people.
Yes.
Except for one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Jermaine still has to go through
the background check.
Background.
Yeah. But
they
still have to have their guy's appointment because we changed the bylaws.
Yeah. And they already kind of sent hers to us anyway, so.
Yeah.
And there's a meeting tomorrow night.
6:30. 2:30.
I just want to watch the show. It's going to be a good one. Yeah. We've got a couple of good ones in here. I'm feeling this one.
Let me tell you something. Steve's kind of a quiet. He doesn't say anything unless he needs to. Mary's the same way. And Josh is very professional. And I'm telling you something, there was a few times I sat over there that I mean, I want to jump out of my chair, and he held it together, and he was, he just has a calming factor. Even if you're on the hot seat with him, he doesn't make you feel like an idiot. So I'm glad he kept me in check.
Yeah,
Tom's one we got to worry about.
There's a right way to go about this, there's a wrong way to go about this. And I think that we're all justified in being angry about the way this has gone at this point. But I think it's important that we conduct ourselves professionally,
to move forward,
and that we are able to move forward with the plan. So while I've had some unpleasant conversations with people over the last month in my work on this, I've always made sure that I was respectful of everyone's point of view and where everyone was coming from, because just because you're not well suited for a job doesn't mean that you're a bad person or you have malicious intent. It just means that sometimes you may be in over your head. And I can relate to that feeling of being in over my head in some roles that I've had in the past. So I try to be empathetic towards everyone in this situation. But we have to make some tough choices.
I give no quarter.
Yeah.
I give no quarter.
Me neither.
And kind of empathetic is a good thing.
You can be firm and you can be kind and you can be fair at the same time.
That's my wife's been trying to teach me that for years.
But John all along has said, I think, exactly the right thing, and that is keep your eye on the ball.
Absolutely.
What do we want to do with this business?
Absolutely.
We want it to succeed, and we want to be able to sell it.
Absolutely. And that's exactly correct.
And if it doesn't succeed,
and I'll be in receivership, and I'll get all the money.
Yeah.
We're going to see you vacation after that.
Do you need an answer to that?
Okay, well, here you know, John, I'm sorry, did that answer your question okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Very cool. Oh, well, thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.
I forgot what part we are in this meeting here.
So I'm not hearing no other business, right? I'm hearing nothing.
No.
I'm hearing one more once, twice. Those meetings are changed.
Well, I'd like to say, Josh, thank you very much for your time.